This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us on Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Our guest is Andrew Roberts, the best-selling author of The Storm of War, A New History of the Second World War, Masters and Commanders, How Four Titans Won the War in the West, 1941 to 1945, and Napoleon, A Life, winner of the Los Angeles Times Book Award. Now, his latest work is the definitive work about Winston Churchill. There have been a number of biographies about the great leader of World War II in Great Britain, and this one is almost 1,100 pages, and it is quite a tour de force. When we seek an example of unalloyed courage, the man who comes to mind to many of us is Winston Churchill, a visionary leader, immune from the consensus of the day, who stood firmly for his beliefs when everyone doubted him. And this book describes many new aspects of Winston Churchill's life and some popular misunderstandings about Churchill that need to be corrected. And let's start there, Andrew Roberts. What are some of the misunderstandings about this man who lived to be 90 years old?
Yes, well, thank you very much. It's a great honor to be on the show, Jim. I think there have been huge numbers of misunderstandings about Churchill, many of them on the internet. Cyberspace has not been kind, really, overall to Churchill, where a number of conspiracy theories have come forward that he was responsible for the sinking of the Lusitania, for example, even the Titanic. There was, a few years ago, an accusation that he was responsible for gassing Iraqi tribesmen. And what you have to do in each case is to go back to the original evidence, the historical sources, and you'll find that in 99 out of 100, in fact, Churchill wasn't responsible for these things. With regard to the gassing of the Iraqi tribesmen, in fact, it was tear gas that he was recommending was used rather than mustard gas or chlorine gas or anything lethal, for example.
Well, what gave Churchill the enormous strength that was necessary to take on a superior force in Nazi Germany when bombs were raining on London and so many others caved in?
Well, he was a man of immense moral courage. He had spotted, of course, that the Nazis and and Hitler were evil forces in the world much earlier than everybody else. He'd said it again and again. Nobody wanted to listen in the 1930s, but nonetheless, he was the first and foremost of the British politicians to say so. And when he was proved right, I think that gave him an enormous boost. But also, his entire life up until that time, as he said, had been a preparation for this hour and for this trial. And he'd held many of the great offices of state. He'd seen many great changes in his fortunes, backwards and forwards. And so by the time he came to the premiership, age 65, in May 1940, he was a really steely, hardened campaigner.
He was a man of his time and lasted longer than any of the other leaders of that time, despite a lifestyle. I think you would conclude, Andrew, or concede, that he was not a man of moderation.
No, he smoked 160,000 cigars in his life. And he also drank an enormous amount. He wasn't an alcoholic, I've concluded in the course of the years that I've been writing about him. He was able to take his drink. He had an ox-like constitution. As the journalist C.P. Scott said about him, Winston Churchill couldn't have been an alcoholic because no alcoholic could have drunk that much.
Well, he lived to be 90. His father died at 45, so he doubled his dad, but he was driven to win the affection and respect of his father.
Yes, that's right. Even after his father's death, it's extraordinary. In many ways, you can see his career as an attempt to win the admiration of the shade of his long-dead father, who had only treated him with contempt and disdain in his life. And yet he loved his father, and after his father died, when Churchill himself was 20, he wrote his father's biography, and he sought out his father's friends. He adopted his father's political stance and physical stance also even. He called his son Randolph. And then after the Second World War, he wrote a short story about meeting his father's ghost, which is a very interesting psychological insight into the relationship that he had with his by then long-dead father.
How did Churchill really feel about Franklin Delano Roosevelt?
He liked him. He liked him enormously personally. They saw in each other fellow aristocrats. Roosevelt was very much an aristocrat of an American aristocrat in the same way that Churchill was a British aristocrat. They saw eye to eye on a lot of things with regard to domestic politics. Of course, he wanted Roosevelt to get America as closely involved in the Second World War as early as possible, which he saw as a war for civilization and democracy, and was quite frustrated, really, that the United States didn't make efforts to deliberately get involved in the war, but instead had Hitler declare war on America in December 1941.
The book is Churchill, Walking with Destiny, from Andrew Roberts, and it's far from a puff piece. You go through some of his mistakes, and Churchill would certainly concede that he made more than a few.
He did. He wrote to his wife, Clementine, when he was in the trenches. He said, "I should have made nothing if I had not made mistakes," which was a very interesting piece of self-analysis, because he did make many, many errors through his life. But he learned from them, and this was one of the most impressive aspects of Churchill, that as a politician, he did learn from his mistakes, and he very rarely ever made the same mistake twice.
Matt on Corsi asks about Churchill's handling of India. I know you cover this extensively in your book.
Yes, that's right. He did believe in the empire. He thought that the British Empire was a good thing for Indians, but he mistook the time, really, that it was necessary to hand India back to the Indians. However, of course, during the Second World War, had it not been for Britain, for India being in the empire, Britain wouldn't have needed to have helped defend it against the Japanese. And when the Japanese took the Philippines, they killed some 17% of the Filipino population. And if that had been replicated in India, which they could very easily have captured without the British Empire being there, that would have led to the deaths of tens of millions of people. So there's a good argument, really, I think, on both sides of this.
Was Churchill in any way responsible for starvation of perhaps millions of people in India?
No, he wasn't. This is another myth. This is a bit like the gassing of the Iraqi tribesmen. It's completely untrue. There was a terrible cyclone which hit Bengal in October 1942, and which just basically washed away the roads and the railways needed to get rice to the people there who started to starve. But unfortunately, the places that one bought rice historically in the past to deal with these kind of famines were Thailand and Burma and Malaya, all three of which were under the control of the Japanese, who clearly weren't about to sell any to the British. So, in fact, we were fighting them. They also had submarines off the Bay of Bengal. And so although Churchill did write to Roosevelt and various other people asking for rice, and when they had able to clear the sea lanes, they brought in as much as they could, including millions of tons of it. Unfortunately, by then, it was very largely too late, and millions of people did die. But this was not Winston Churchill's fault.
Charles and Amy. Charles, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with our guest, Andrew Roberts.
Yeah, y'all gonna put me on the radio?
You're on the radio. Well, we'll go to someone else. We've got Randy and Zachary. Randy, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, I just want to make a comment. I couldn't place a picture anybody else being prime minister in 1940 but Winston Churchill. Thanks.
Could anyone else have done the job?
Yes, there was the Foreign Secretary, Lord Halifax, who was asked whether or not he wanted the job before Churchill, and he decided not to. He decided to let Churchill do it himself. He, of course, was in the House of Lords, and therefore would have been at one stage removed from the decision-making that has to take place in the House of Commons. But he was the person who the King wanted to have, and so had he insisted on the job, he might well have got it instead of Churchill.
What did you learn from Churchill from your new material unearthed from King George VI's wartime diaries?
Well, I was very fortunate that the Queen allowed me to be the first Churchill biographer to use her father's diaries. And he met Churchill, the King met Churchill every Tuesday of the Second World War. They had lunch together. And Churchill trusted the King with all the great secrets of the Second World War. And luckily, he then went and wrote down everything that Churchill had said. So it's a great new source. And what one sees an awful lot, of course, of new things from it. But primarily, Churchill's great frustration, his irritation, really, that the United States wasn't getting more involved in the Second World War earlier. He saw the struggle as a great struggle for civilization and democracy against Hitler and the Nazis, and really hoped that the United States would be more committed to it. As it was, of course, it took Adolf Hitler to declare war against America in December 1941.
The book is Churchill, Walking with Destiny, from Andrew Roberts. We only have about 15 seconds, but what would Winston Churchill think of Donald Trump?
Oh, well, he died half a century ago, so I'm afraid that's completely impossible to tell.
All right, that's a good answer. Thank you, Andrew, and congratulations on voluminous and important work, Churchill, Walking with Destiny.